Good to see you guys all here. And we're going to be continuing in our study through the book of Luke. If you want to turn in your Bibles, you can, to Luke 10. And we are in a portion of Luke that is referred to as like the traveling narratives. These are stories or teachings that Jesus is doing on his way to Jerusalem. And as he's on his way, we see a shift in some of his teaching that, although the themes don't change, there is kind of a deeper urgency as he knows he's going towards his crucifixion and ultimately his resurrection. There's a sobriety to it. We see a little bit more of a corrective in some of his teaching. We hear that urgency in his tone. And we'll see that again in our chapter today. I had the chance to teach up at Forest Home over a week ago, and was talking about, I did this sort of four-part series that really was reflected off of our teachings of Luke, but have been noticing as Jesus has been going through this gospel how much he's telling us really, when it comes down to it, how to live. What is the good life? What is the abundant life? And how do we step into it? That it comes from this heart of compassion, that it comes from a posture of teachability and softness of heart, that it's able to be corrected and instructed, that it's got this sort of selflessness, a laying aside of our ego, and focusing instead on the things that matter in light of the kingdom of heaven. And we're going to see that as well as we look in a passage that is the story of Mary and Martha, which many of you are probably immediately familiar with. And it's a passage about vocation, on our calling. It's a standard not of right and wrong as much as it is better and best. What is the best thing for us? And as we look at this teaching, we're going to see Jesus is going to center this on this idea of purity of heart, purity of intention. And in order to do this, what we will see is him creating a bit of self-awareness for Martha. Martha, who's got this gift and calling of hospitality, has become distracted and double-minded and gets lost in the worry and anxiety. And as a result of this, misses the deeper calling, the deeper value of what she brings. So if you could put the words up there, Greg, let me read this for us. We've got a short little passage here today, but this is Luke 10, 38 through 42. It says, "Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me.' But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her.'" All right, the word of the Lord. Here again, all of you have heard this story before. This is it's a classic one, and it has, in many ways, I feel like, been misused. That sometimes this has had this sort of confusing way of prioritizing the prayerful or contemplative life versus the active life. That you go, yeah, you have one person in this story, Martha, who's the taking care of the tasks. But then you've got Mary, who's the prayerful one, who's just sitting at Jesus' feet. And we go, oh, that's the more holy, right? That what we should be doing is living the more prayerful life. Therefore, the person in the workplace over here that's making a decent salary, they're kind of doing secular work. The person over here that's going to Africa and feeding the poor, that's the holy work, right? And this is a way that we kind of determine who is ranked the highest in God's kingdom. And I think it's a huge mistake. That's a mistaken lens to put on this passage. That really, in the end, I think Jesus rarely deals with what's on the surface of things, or what we might call the appearances, the way things look. That Jesus is always pushing us to look beneath the surface, always causing us to look deeper. And we are often so concerned with the actions or the outward, when in fact what Jesus is looking straight at is our heart, right? And he sees deep in there all that's going on, all the turmoil, all the worry, all the distraction. And that is going to be again and again what Jesus confronts. And Martha has welcomed Jesus into her home. Like, again, we've talked about this as a traveling narrative, and that Jesus is traveling with a group of people. As they get close to Samaria, you remember if you were here a few weeks ago, they come approach the city, and the Samaritans say, "You can't come in. You're too controversial. We don't want to deal with you." And they send Jesus on his way. And that's where the disciples are like, "Let's call down fire." Jesus says, no, we're here to heal. But as they move forward, they come to this city where Jesus has a couple close friends, Mary and Martha, and they're welcomed in. And I think we see here something that really Scripture is going to identify as a noble gift, which is the gift of hospitality. That Martha creates this space, this safe, sacred space, where there's a meal, where there's interaction, where people are able to learn. And I think that hospitality, sometimes it might get a diminished sort of kind of rap when it shouldn't. I think this is one of the just the greatest gifts that God gives. I see the gift of hospitality really in a lot of ways. It's like curating this beautiful experience. And people have said, if you look at Jesus' ministry overall, he basically just goes and has meals with bad people. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. But this idea of the meal was something so significant to how ministry functioned, that it happened at a table. It happened in a place of intimacy where people's guard was down, where people were able to laugh and to engage. And this is something that is not just a joy in life, but I think is one of the greatest sacred gifts that God gives us. And this is how Martha's wired. She's going to prepare the meal. She's going to be in the back and set things straight and create order. And this is who she is. And I think at this point, as she welcomes Jesus into her home, everything we see in her is good. The problem is what's going on under the surface, the turmoil that's there. You know that I'm kind of partial. I enjoy all these personality studies and Myers-Briggs things. And I was thinking about this, that I think that Martha's probably an ESTJ. Does anybody know what this is? These like these letters, right? You take this test. Anybody else out there that's an ESTJ? All right. ESTJ is like the executive, right? They're the ones that create the structure. They're the ones that create the rules. If you don't have these people, nothing gets done. So, I wasn't going to mention any names, but we have somebody on staff that's an ESTJ, and without this person, nothing would get done. It's true. But just like any personality, it comes with its strengths, and it comes with its weaknesses. And I think we see in Martha here where some of that weakness shows itself. I was reading this about the ESTJs this week, and it says, ESTJs don't work alone, and they expect their reliability and work ethic to be reciprocated. People with this personality type meet their promises, and if partners or subordinates jeopardize them through incompetence or laziness or worse still, dishonesty, they do not hesitate to show their wrath. And this is, I think, again, kind of where we see in Martha her giftedness, her strength, but also, as it turns out, her weakness, which is true, by the way, of every single one of us. We just happen to be talking about Martha here. And this is Martha's personality that's on display. And I love the vulnerability that this story shows up here and her name is attached to it. I wonder if Luke asked her permission before he put it in here. But here we see Martha's heart laid bare. And Martha, the host, all of a sudden in this, finding in there worry, anxiety, maybe some envy and some jealousy. She looks over at her younger sister, I'm guessing younger because it sounds like a big sister, and goes, "Lazy, like get in here and help me." But instead of just confronting Mary, what we see is her go to Jesus. And she's going to say, "Nobody knows that I'm in here all by myself doing all of this. Jesus, tell her to come in here and help me." And see, here I think we get this, again, this window into what is going on into the depths of Martha's heart. That there's a vulnerability to this, but the way it manifests itself, and I think this is so true, I don't think there's a single one of us in here that can't identify, it manifests itself in blame. I like this from Brené Brown. She says, Blame is simply the discharging of discomfort and pain. Blame is simply the discharging of discomfort and pain. That thing inside of her, as she's looking over there, and there's Mary sitting in there at Jesus' feet, and something in her starts to boil. That as she's filled with worry and anxiety, that like we've got to hold this all together, everything has to be just right, the party's got to be perfect, and there's my lazy sister doing nothing, and she's just looking adoringly at Jesus. Like, how dare she? And my hunch is that underneath even the blame is a sense of envy of this place that her sister is sitting. That she's in this place of adoration at Jesus' feet. And all of a sudden, Martha just feels lost. She feels alone. She feels resentful. And she lashes out. She asks Jesus to correct Mary. Tell her to get back to work. And I wonder if, you know, I was thinking, it's an interesting question. I wonder if Martha wishes that she was at Jesus' feet. And I bet you she doesn't. I bet you if Martha was totally honest, she loves the work that she's doing. But somehow to see somebody else doing their thing, I think, can oftentimes bring up in us a sort of insecurity. Where even if we are doing that thing that we are called to do, when we see somebody else flourishing in their giftedness, we worry that maybe there's something missing in us. Do you do this? I do this. I do this. When I see somebody else really stepping into their giftedness, and I realize, oh, I don't have that. All of a sudden, there's this, like, the envy. It's not jealousy. Jealousy is, I want that. Envy is like, oh, this is something that's wrong with me. And it's a subtle little thing that sneaks in there, right? But what it does is it wrecks our sense of self-worth. And we realize that we're constantly trying to prove our worth by what we do. Do any of you guys do this? Which means you're only as happy as your last great success. I'll have this experience from time to time where I think that, you know, somebody will write me an email and go, Jeff, that was a really great sermon. And I'll go, okay, this week I made it. I'm okay this week, right? Because, I mean, that's if my worth is tied to what I do, if my value is connected to my gifts, then it's going to be always reflective of my performance, which is just, it matters how I do today. Am I okay? Well, if I do well today, I'm okay. And you see the fragility of this, but this is how most of us live, where our sense of value, our sense of worth is tied to our influence, it's tied to our giftedness, it's tied directly to praise. And as a result of it, it's fragile. It's always one step away from being let down, always in this position where it's so easily accused, easily threatened. Jesus looks at Martha, and this is what he sees, a heart that is so torn up. It's so distracted by so many things, so many fears and anxieties and worries. And Jesus says, Martha, Martha. And that repeating of her name is a way of showing just an emotional engagement. That as she comes in, she's going, we got to set this straight. We got to get Mary back in the kitchen. This is how we could fix it. Tell her she's lazy. Tell her she's supposed to help me. And see, the thing is, what Mary is doing is actually very brave. Because she's probably the only woman in the room. Maybe not. But it would have been kind of provocative at the time to sit at Jesus' feet. This is what disciples did. And here you have Mary having the courage to go, I think I could do what Jesus is doing. I think I could be one of these people. I think I could be a disciple. And so there she is, sitting at his feet, going, could this be me? And we have Martha in the kitchen, engaged in her vocation, and we've got Mary sitting in there, maybe just discovering hers for the first time. There's a vulnerability to it. And there's a defense that Jesus is going to make, because maybe even in Martha's thinking, she's going, a woman belongs in here. And Jesus is going, no, she belongs right here. Jesus is going to hold Mary up as the example and say she's concerned about the right thing, the one thing, the needful thing. And this is important. What Martha is doing is so good, and yet in all her fear and worry, she's missing out on the fruit of this beautiful gift that she's been given of hospitality. And all her envy and suspicion and criticism of Mary. And I think, you know what? There may have been times where Mary deserved it. That maybe Mary is, you know, I kind of see her a little different personality type. Well, I probably project myself on her like an INFP that just wants to sit and learn, right? And there are times where Patty's like, yeah, stop reading, get in the kitchen and do the dishes. And I'm like, I'm reading about Jesus, Patty. Right? No. So, listen, there's probably times where there's been some legitimate rebuke where Mary's been sitting in there and it's like, hey, come on, time to get to work. But it's not this time. And Mary instead is in this place where I think she's discovering who she is, who she was meant to be by sitting at Jesus' feet. And again, I think this is hard for Martha to see. And I relate to this as well, that I think sometimes there are people that I just sort of measure myself against. How do I know if I'm doing well in life? Well, I find somebody that's kind of in my league and I measure myself. And when I do that, what I find is that their successes become threats. Have you felt that before? Something happens to somebody you dearly love and you're like, why am I resentful? And you realize, oh, they just passed me up in my silly little game of comparison, right? A game you didn't even know you were playing. A game I'm pretty sure Martha doesn't even know she's playing. And so Jesus goes, Martha, Martha, why are you so worried about so many things? And that calling out, this is Jesus, I think, in a really loving way, saying, do you see all that is going on inside of you? All the wasted energy that goes into worry, right? I think of it like all the bandwidth that's being used up by like needless things. That we have from God a yoke that is easy, a burden that is light. But we so often go, no, no, no. This is too heavy. This is too much to bear. And I wonder how much of that is due to what we've taken on ourselves. Mary's heart is pure. It's pure. It's humble. It's focused there, at least at this moment, right? And so what we see here is a window into really an invitation for all of us, even to Martha, that while she may not be sitting at Jesus' feet in this story, that this one thing, this needful thing that Jesus is going to point out is available to her as well and to us. This purity of heart, this purity of intention. I like how Psalm 119, I've got a slide for this, says, how can a young man or woman keep her way pure? By guarding it according to your word. With my whole heart I seek you. Let me not wander from your commandments. That whole heart is something that we see again and again throughout Scripture. This is what Jesus is after. He's after your heart. How much? Your whole heart. Jeremiah, he says, you'll seek me and find me when you search with your whole heart. And when our heart is divided, when our heart is worried, when we're trying to put on appearances or act like we've got it all figured out, when we're concerned about all these things, God doesn't have our whole heart. He has some. James is going to call this like the double-minded man. In fact, he's going to say, this person who's constantly focusing, juggling all these things, trying to keep all these plates spinning, right? These are all the metaphors. This person's like a wave tossed about. There's a purity of intention here that is so important. It's the most important thing. And see, I think Luke is doing this for emphasis as a way of speaking not only a true story and moment that happened, but also placing an emphasis on what we learned last week. Last week, Greg taught us the story of the Good Samaritan. And it's such a great story. And this, you know, you've got this lawyer saying to Jesus, who's my neighbor? And really, probably deep down, who is it okay for me not to love? Do I have to love? Okay, I get it that I have to love my neighbor, but do I have to love the Samaritan? Right? And Jesus goes, not only do you have to love the Samaritan, I'm going to tell you a story where he's the hero of the story. Right? It's not just that you need to love this person you consider your enemy, but if only you could be like him, right? He holds up this picture of a deep compassion and goes, this is the neighbor, right? The one who goes out of his way to help the one in need. But Luke tells this story and he goes, they came to this town, and he doesn't say it by name, but this town is Bethany. We know that from John's gospel, which just so happens to be right before they enter Jerusalem. Which means that this story is kind of placed here out of order. That Jesus, in this narrative, as he's traveling, we are going to find himself like fast-forwarding to the end, and then he's going to rewind, and there's going to come some other moments. So we don't have a tight chronology here. And people have asked, why? Why did he put it here? What was the importance here? And some have said, and I think this is true, that even the prodigal son story could be misunderstood. Meaning you could read that story and just think, well, it's just about living a compassionate life. It's just about serving the poor. That if you want to know how to live the abundant life or a meaningful life, serve those in need. And I wonder if Luke is saying, oh no, there's a pitfall there. Which is the person who's the most compassionate wins. The person who's the most generous. That person. They've got the higher ground. And so maybe what's happening here is this story of Jesus is saying, no, even compassion is not the thing. And that this posture of remaining at the feet of Jesus, this is the thing. That a life of obedience is crucial. And if that's true, then one of the most important things we can learn how to do is to discern the voice of God. God, is this what you're asking me to do? Because there are so many opportunities and so many things in front of us, so many good things to say yes to. But this question of God, is this what you're calling me to do? How important it is that we've learned how to recognize Jesus' voice. I love how in John 10:27, Jesus says, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I think as Jesus is pointing out Mary, he's pointing at that the fact that she's there and she's listening with such intention. And over here, Martha is so distracted, right? That one of the most important things, maybe the most important thing that we can learn how to do is to really listen and know the voice of the shepherd. And too often we don't. Too often we fail to. I like this from Dallas Willard. He says, only failure to hear his voice when we want to is due to the fact that we do not in general want to hear it, and that we want it only when we think we need it. Our failure to hear his voice when we want to is due to the fact that we do not in general want to hear it, that we want it only when we think we need it. This idea that our sort of default mode is like hoping like no news is good news, right? That we want to just coast right along, and if everything's going well, then there's no need to check in. Jesus, let me know if I'm making a huge mistake, but otherwise I'll just assume that this is the way to go. This way of not paying attention and listening until something goes wrong, right? So most of us, when we pray, have a tendency to just say, help. God, help, I need you, something bad happened, help, which is a good prayer, by the way, and don't hear me knocking that. But so often we've missed the opportunity to wake up each day and go, God, what is it today? What is the invitation today? God, show me, God, direct my steps today. God, let me not miss it, the opportunities that you have for me today. And as we go through our day, there's an attention. God, is this it? As opportunities come our way that may seem like a good thing, are we going, Jesus, is this what I'm supposed to pick up? Is this what I'm supposed to do? And it takes time, and it takes practice, and it takes work, but it's valuable work. I've got a few points that I want to kind of highlight here as takeaways. The first one is this, that your value is not what you do, but who you are. And that if we don't understand this, we're constantly trying to prove our value or constantly second-guessing our value. That this value that we have is something that God sees. He looks right into your heart and goes, that's it, that thing. It's the way we love our children. Oh, I love this about you. And the delight of a parent is when you see your child just come to life and be them. This is what God wants. And don't hear me saying you're perfect just the way you are, because you're not, right? That we have so much to learn and grow and to step into and to mature into, and yet at the same time, our value isn't something that we gain along the way. It's intrinsic to who we are. It's found in the eyes of that parent looking at their child and going, oh, I delight in you. I love you. Something tells me that if Martha knew this, she would be good. She could be there functioning in her giftedness without any need for affirmation or recognition or resentment towards others that aren't participating. She could just be herself. And I think Jesus on the way out would go, yep, that's the one thing, right? That is somebody focused on what they're called to do. I have this story from when I was a kid. I tried out for a little harder soccer league to be in and got into it, but turns out I was the youngest guy in the league. The cutoff was like my birthday, right? And so I was on this team, and forever I just thought, I don't feel like I belong here, and it affected the way I played. And I remember my mom saying to me this one time, Jeff, go out there and play like your team needs you. I was like, okay, that like clicked. And so I just went out thinking, okay, I'm just going to play that way. And at the end, my coach was like, what happened to you? Right? But this question, do I belong? Do I fit in? Right? That's constantly saying, you don't, you don't, you don't. But the truth is that for each one of you, we need you. And Jesus goes, look, I've made you just the way you are. Everything that you have and all that stuff that you don't have or all the stuff you wish you had. Like God is going, this by design. And the fact is we need you. We need you to come alive. That there are things that only you can do, right? And to step in into obedience is to step into that. Number two, stop comparing yourself to others. As if that's easy, right? I was shown a video the other week, and it's this like Bob Newhart thing where this woman's sitting in his office. How many of you have seen this? And she's saying, yeah, I'm afraid of like tight spaces. I can't, you know, I'm afraid of being buried alive. And, you know, she's got this big sob story. And he goes, okay, I'm just going to tell you two words. You know this one? Stop it. She's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he's like, stop it. And, of course, this is trivializing therapy, and obviously it's more complex, but when it comes to comparing yourself to somebody else, I think there's so much wisdom in just going, stop it, Jeff. Stop doing that. That's that thing, that nature I fall back into, that temptation where I'm hoping to come out a little bit ahead, where I'm hoping that, like, you know, I'm okay fitting in, but I hope I'm in the top of the class. And you see Jesus going, that doesn't work that way. That's your thing. That's your game down there. It's not the way I see you, right? And for Jesus, he sees everyone individually and also the importance of all of us coming alive. And so as Martha sits there and looks at Mary and goes, what about her? He's like, what concern is that to you, right? This is what he says to Peter when he tells Peter about it, kind of what the next steps. And Peter says, what about John? And Jesus goes, Peter, what is that to you? Stop it, right? There's enough if we just are looking to ourselves and we're constantly trying to compare. We get ourselves in trouble. Not to mention the fact that we're horrible at it. You know, that was the whole, like, don't judge because of this log that's in your eye. That's our lack of self-awareness again. But I love this quote. This is from the Reverend John Watson. And he says, let us be kind to one another, for most of us are fighting a hard battle. And you know what? I think this is why Jesus says to Martha her name twice. that not only is he saying stop it, but he's also going, I see your battle. I see this hard battle. Jesus says it, I think, with deep compassion, but also going, we don't have time for this, Martha, right? All this wasted energy, when instead what I want for you is just be free. That heart set free, that heart fully alive. The next one, we need to cultivate a habit of listening for God's voice. And part of this is a habit of tuning out all the negativity, all the things that come in and tell you this is where you don't measure up, right? Which is pretty much 100% of advertising, maybe 99%. This is the thing you're missing that you really need, right? All that stuff that points to inadequacy, all that sort of airbrushed photography that says you would be more lovable if you looked this way or if you had this thing or if your resume was a little tighter or your title was a little bit more impressive. You lay aside all those voices and you tune your ear to that voice of the shepherd. You pay attention to that voice that is constantly telling you, this is who you are. You're my beloved. You're my child. Right? Who sees you in you what really matters and longs for that to come alive. I'm going to tell a story about Steve that I asked his permission, but not in the first service, so I went a little bit on faith. But Steve said this in our elder board meeting. And I thought, gosh, this was just so vulnerable. But he says, I'm realizing, I'm going to butcher this maybe, Steve, so you can correct me, but how little I need God to write good curriculum for my Bible school or the university that he teaches at. How little I need God to do it. Why? Because he's gifted at it. And what we do in our giftedness is we create this sense of self-sufficiency. If we find in our gifts our sense of worth, what we do is so often make them our own and disconnect them from their source. And that idea that even if we're gifted in that way, we need to still be coming back to that place of God is this, what you have for me. I think of this all the time in teaching. Because you know this about me, but I'm curious. I just love to rabbit trail. And so often I think, oh, what if we talked about this? Or I'm reading a passage and I think this would be interesting. But it's this thing. And I see God go, come back. And you realize, oh, yeah, there's a message that is God's message for us today. And how easy in my sort of curiosity to go my own way. How constantly that listening, obedient response is critical to getting it right. I have a few questions for us. Questions for us to think about. And some of these may be a little bit painful. Because if you're like me, again, the blame is a much easier course to take. Who is at fault? I hurt. It's that person's fault. Or comparison is a way of trying to soothe this inner ache where I think what God is saying to us, probably our name twice and saying, Jeff, what's going on beneath the surface there? So these are kind of beneath the surface questions. The first one, where are you worried, anxious, stressed? Where do you find yourself looking for someone to blame? And that's a good one to just sit with and be honest about. Or as those things come to the surface to go, oh, that's what that is, worry, or that's fear, or that's blame. What is behind that? What is the insecurity behind that, lurking behind that? What is the thing that I'm so threatened by? As I find myself criticizing somebody I love, where is that coming from? And going, what is it in me that all of a sudden feels unworthy? Number two, what are you carrying that you're not supposed to? What are you trying to control? What is the actual fear? We love to be busy and to tell people how busy we are. Because busy means value, right? You are in demand. Don't you love to be in demand? I'm so busy. I got so much going on. And so much of that is trying to prove something to ourselves, maybe, or at least to those around us. What are you carrying that you're not supposed to? That there's a lightness to the calling that God gives. And when our hearts are responding frantically, or we're trying to show that we've got it all together, I feel like God's going like, okay, Martha, breathe. Breathe. Lay these things down, right? Number three, where do you experience envy or jealousy? Who do you measure yourself against? You can write it down by name. Who is it? Often somebody that you totally love and respect, and yet you've got this weird competitive thing going with. Where are you envious? Do you recognize those feelings? Learn to recognize those feelings. What would it be like to let this whole thing go? The freedom that we would have. Gosh, we live in the social media world of creating envy, creating jealousy. Which, by the way, all of you guys win every time you take a picture of that sunset and be like, blessed, like, oh, Laguna. And all your friends are like, envy, envy, envy. That whole game, right? If only you actually felt secure. But we're posting that because we feel terrible about ourselves and we're trying to show that we're winning, right? Like that whole thing. Can we just stop? What would it be like to let this whole thing go? And number four, what comes to mind when God thinks of you? Have you asked Him? And this to me is like where we come back to the one thing. That if you could sit in that place, to sit in that place of listening to God's voice. And this is, again, so often when I am in the midst of worry or fear or control or envy, God's voice is not to be heard. It's there, but all these other things, the volumes become so loud. And to have that discipline that just goes, what is my shepherd saying? What is my Father saying? Saying to you, you're my beloved. And when we know that, what comes out of us is so free. To step into your calling and your vocation from that place has this sort of self-forgetfulness to it. I think this is backing up a little bit, but can you go back to that Merton quote? Merton, he says, a man knows when he has found his vocation, when he stops thinking about how to live and begins to live. This is like freedom. It's flow. It's just being in that sort of self-forgetful place. And really, in the end, the texture of this is joy. That this is like the bonus, that when we give our lives to like this selfless compassion, pouring it out on others, when we're doing this in obedience to Jesus, there's just this joy that isn't obsessed with glory, that instead is like giving it away, constantly giving it away. I was reading this from Brennan Manning, and he is giving counsel to this lady who's struggling with this. And he says, in the next few minutes, I prayed with her for healing. Then I asked her if she would find a quiet place every morning for the next 30 days, sit down in a chair, close her eyes, turn her palms, and pray this one phrase over and over, Abba, I belong to you. Daddy, I belong to you. And I love that as a centering prayer, not as a chant, but as a way of like bringing our hearts into alignment. That if we could sit there at the feet of God, if we could do that each day, sit before God and go, I belong to you. This day is yours. My life is yours. My heart is yours. To be able to hear that voice, how radically would that change the course of that day? How radically would it change the texture of the fruit that is born in our life? It would have that sort of selflessness, that freedom, that delight in it. This is the abundant life. One of my favorite writers is Soren Kierkegaard, and he wrote these beautiful prayers. But he wrote a book called Purity of Heart is to Will One Thing, which I feel like fits so well. I feel like that is what Jesus is saying here, is Mary in her heart has willed this one thing, which is submission to Jesus, to know Him. And I want to say this prayer for us that he wrote, that I feel like is just this prayer of beautiful alignment. bringing this back into perspective. So why don't you all stand with me if you would? I'm going to ask if our prayer team would come down, because we would love to pray for any of you that would desire prayer. But let me, in closing, read this over all of us. He says, Father in heaven, what are we without you? What is all that we know, vast accumulation though it be, but a chipped fragment if we do not know you? What is all our striving? Could it ever encompass a world but a half-finished work if we do not know you? You, the one who is one thing and who is all. So, may you give to the intellect wisdom to comprehend that one thing, to the heart sincerity to receive this and this only, to the will purity that wills only one thing. In prosperity, may you grant perseverance to will one thing, amid distraction, collectedness to will one thing, in suffering, patience to will one thing. You that gives both the beginning and the completion, may you early at the dawn of the day give to the young the resolution to will one thing. As the day wanes, may you give to the old a renewed remembrance of that first resolution, that the first may be like the last and the last like the first, in possession of a life that has willed only one thing, to know God. Or as Paul writes, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Amen. Thank you for being here. God bless you.